Listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And in the spirit of equal time FCC rules, to have Joe Ray Perkins. Joe Ray Perkins is the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate here in Oregon. Last week we had on Ibrahim Taher, who is the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate, and we have yet to hear from Jeff Merkley, who is the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. But tonight we're going to be talking with Joe Ray Perkins about issues related to incarceration and criminal justice here on Prison Pipeline. Joe Ray, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you, Emma. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And you are the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate here in Oregon?
Correct. I am the nominee.
Well, will you please, let's start by first, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I live in Albany with my husband, and we have been married a long time. He was actually my high school sweetheart, and we've got, our kids are married, and there's a total of 14 grandkids with their blended families, ages 6 years old on up to 19. Quite a spread of grandkids. My background, I am technically retired now. So my background has been in the financial services industry. I have been a financial advisor, financial planner. I've been in real estate, a banker. I'm a Main Street American. My husband is a carpet installation contractor. We're just everyday people. And so we've been through the good, the bad, the ugly. We've come out the other side again. And so I really resonate with what a lot of everyday Main Street American Oregonians go through.
So tonight we're going to be talking about issues related to incarceration and criminal justice.
Okay.
I'd like to start by asking you about stuff that's recently been happening in the news. As we all know, about a month ago, George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and that's led to a whole set of conversations, including legislation at both the local, state, and the federal level, and the Republican Senate put forward some legislation which did certain things such as banning chokeholds. And can you tell me, what is your position on the recent legislation that's come up before the U.S. Senate? Where do you stand on that legislation? Where do you stand on the issue of chokeholds and policing?
Okay, so I honestly have not gone through all of the legislation that they've proposed. There's still some issues that they're ironing out. I believe on the chokeholds that it was to be used in extremely rare instances, if I remember correctly. And I agree with that. It should be a very rare incident. And of course, what we saw happen to George Floyd was not a chokehold. I would not describe that as a chokehold. A chokehold you will generally do, I cannot imagine it being done with your knee. So I would call that something else, not quite sure what name I would put on it. We do need to do some reform. I have personally seen some instances where I think that the police were a little bit out of, what's the word I want to say? Undue force that wasn't really necessary in the incident that I personally witnessed, having witnessed from start to finish. But I think that one of the biggest problems we have is our law enforcement officers are under so much incredible pressure and stress. They see things that 99.9% of us are never going to witness, and they see it on a very regular basis. I believe that with the reforms, that one, they probably need training longer before they're put out on active force. And I've heard that in some countries, they train for 3 years and then they basically intern for a year before they are on their own. And it's not like that here in the United States. They're dealing with so many mental health challenges that in years past they didn't have to deal with, because we had the funding for mental health. And I think that we have more mental health issues today. I'm not sure why, that's a whole nother topic. But I really believe strongly that our law enforcement officers need to, on a regular basis, again, depending on what they have witnessed, go through some debriefing, some decompression, so that they aren't holding in and internalizing everything that they are experiencing and seeing on a regular basis. And I think that will go a very, very long way for reform and helping mitigate what we have seen.
So one of the conversations that's been happening nationally since the murder of George Floyd has been the issue of defunding the police, defunding, like reducing funding and redirecting it. Where do you stand on the issue of defunding the police? What is your position on that?
Well, if we look at just the word defunding, everybody's going to think exactly what it sounds like. So if they do not mean that, then they should be using a different word, such as budget reduction. Budget reduction is much more succinct, or budget reallocation versus defunding. Because when you defund somebody, if you look that word up, and I have not, but I'm going to off the top of my head, hopefully knowing a little bit about our English language, is it means to remove that funding. And everybody out there is going to think, rightfully so, that you're talking about stripping away massive amounts of funding. The problem isn't so much the money. The problem goes to, I believe, a lot of the issues that we're seeing is the breakdown, which has been going on since the 60s, of the nucleus family. When we see the fatherless homes, whether they be black or white, brown, it doesn't matter what the race, the ethnicity of the family is. The breakdown of the nuclear family, when it is not intact, has been proven over and over again to me a huge factor, and studies have been done on this as well. So I am all for having some really good youth groups and having people that will mentor the youth, even if they're in intact families with the father and the mother. But we've gone so far away from that, from showing people what community is within their own household, so that as they grow up and now they're interacting with other people, they know how to respond and how to react. And I think that will go also a very long way. The churches need to step up and help out and do what they can do to help the youth get focused. The schools need to step up and help the youth get focused with some goal setting and teach them how to dream, teach them how to desire things that they can achieve. Not everybody is going to be a rocket scientist. Not everybody's going to grow up like and become a Ben Carson and become a pediatric neurosurgeon. But we need people to feel like they can dream again. I think part of the challenges that we're facing is that they've lost the capacity of how to dream and how to say, yeah, I can go after that.
A lot of police departments are receiving they're receiving gear and supplies and equipment from the U.S. military. And so they're calling this the militarization of the police. And if you look at the kinds of equipment that the police take out to like these protests, for instance, in Portland and Seattle, you know, they come with all of this gear, and a lot of that they're getting as surplus from the U.S. military. How do you feel about that issue? Do you feel like the police are becoming like overburdened with paramilitary equipment that like is so intimidating that that kind of draws out this ire from protesters? That's part of what they're calling for, is like, you know, this demilitarizing of the police. Where do you stand on that issue?
After witnessing what I witnessed in Portland, I will disagree with people that are saying that. The law enforcement did not bring out any such types of militarized gear that I noticed, that outside of wearing protective gear, before they were looting and destroying property. They held back, and those of us that live in Oregon, we know that that Mayor Ted Wheeler told the law enforcement to stand down. He told them to stand down starting in right after President Trump was inaugurated, and people started going crazy, and it actually put our law enforcement officers at risk. And so I think that there's times where it's like, okay, why do they have that much militarized equipment? It is surplus goods that is going to go nowhere, and there's times when it is needed, and there's times when it is not needed. I think it should be looked at, but we can't throw everything out at one time. We can't say it's all bad. I think we need to say that some of the stuff is needed. Yeah, I mean, I see the same thing that people see on the news, but I think that that's just a very small percentage. I think that the media is really good at making it look like there's a lot more military equipment out there than it appears. But when you've got people throwing bricks and Molotov cocktails and liquids of we don't know what they are at our law enforcement officers, I think that they need to be make sure that they are properly geared. And the bottom line is, I mean, we've just seen some photos, some videos just this week of citizens that have militarized themselves, and they're walking around now in that same gear. So do we want, and I don't want to see civil war. That is not where I'm going at all with this. But we need to make sure that our law enforcement is protected from those that want to do them harm when they're out there, and their job is to protect us.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we are doing an equal time interview with Joe Ray Perkins. Joe Ray Perkins is the Republican U.S. Senate candidate for the state of Oregon. And last week we had on Ibrahim Taher, who is the Green Party candidate. And we also have invited U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley to be on the show. One of the issues that Black Lives Matter, there is systemic racism in the police departments of the United States, and that there's this failure to see and to understand the role that racism plays in policing. And, you know, this is part of why people of color are locked up at numbers that are so disproportionately, this systemic racism that exists in policing. Do you believe that there is systemic racism in the policing in the United States? And if so, how can that be addressed?
I do not believe that there's systemic racism in the United States within our police department. There are more whites killed by police officers than blacks. And those numbers, people can go online and they can find them. They are there. I believe that roughly 13% of the population are black. I don't have the percentage for brown people and those numbers off the top of my head. But they commit 50% roughly of the crime. So they're going to be in, there's going to be a higher percentage in jail. If your group is committing more of the crimes, then more of you should be arrested and put in jail. I don't believe that it is systemic within law enforcement. I think that there are people that get hung up on it. I think that they use it as an excuse. And I'm not saying I cannot understand what somebody who is not me, I cannot understand what they go through as a non whatever person. It doesn't matter any more than they can understand what I go through. It doesn't matter. We all have our own individual things that we go through. I think that it's the content. I'm going to go back to Martin Luther King. It's the content of one's character and not the color of their skin. And so I do not believe that there is systemic racism within the police department. We cannot all think and act the same. If we did, we would be nothing more than robots. We need to get back to being respectful of each other, respect each other's rights to their own views, values, opinions, and beliefs. It does not mean that we need to agree with them at 100% of the time. Like I said, I've been with my husband since I was 16 years old. I don't agree with him 100% of the time, but I still respect his views, values, beliefs, and opinions, or his right to his views, values, beliefs, and opinions. And we need to start treating people with respect. And I believe that when that happens, we will see this, what people think is racism, hopefully will begin to diminish.
Thank you. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking to Joe Ray Perkins, who is the Republican U.S. Senate candidate for the state of Oregon, and it's part of our Equal Time interview. While we're talking about issues related to race, one of the things that's been in the news a lot lately, and it has, how do you feel about this issue of protecting federal monuments that represent people who are slaveholders?
There is a process in the United States of America that we should be going through. You don't have the right, it is illegal to go and destroy other people's property. Whether you like it or not, that doesn't belong to you. Even though it's federal and that this is a government of we the people, there are monuments that were torn down that have defended freedom, that have been anti-slavery, and they have torn down Christopher Columbus, they've torn down Abraham Lincoln. Why? They're out there. These are people. These are not the Black Lives Matter people. The Black Lives Matter people, the majority of them have been out there peacefully protesting. These are thugs, straight out thugs and criminals that are doing these acts. The majority of them aren't even Black. They have usurped the Black Lives Matter protests of the majority of the Americans out there saying, hey, Black lives make a difference. Every life makes a difference. Again, I'm not going to look at somebody's color of their skin. I'm going to look at the content of their character. I want to know who they are. And that's where we need to get to. We've come so far away from what Martin Luther King said. And I am going to agree with President Trump. We need to enforce our laws against this type of destruction. To see the police just stand there and watch them destroy monument after monument after monument because their mayors or their police chiefs told law enforcement to stand down is wrong. And I'm thankful that they were able to stop the destruction of some of the monuments in Washington, D.C. If you don't like a monument, there's a process that you go through. You take it through the courts. That is the way to do it. And they've torn down statues of abolitionists, Ulysses S. Grant. There's no reason for them to do this. They're only doing it because they can get away with it right now, or so they think. And I think it is 100% wrong that these people are doing this.
Thank you. So I'm going to move the conversation over to another federal issue that, as a candidate, I know that you're aware of and you must have some opinions on. People have been separated from their families, and even children have been held in cages on the U.S. border and separated from their families. Where do you stand on the issue of immigration to the United States? Do you support opening the borders? How do you feel about the immigration concentration camps that are on the border?
Okay, so those are not immigration concentration camps. Nobody complained when, under Obama, those children were held in those holding pens. Nobody said a word. And that was underneath President Obama. So we need to get the facts straight on that. Number two, separating children. If somebody breaks into your home and they get arrested, do their children go with them? The answer is no, they don't. They're going to be separated from their children. Number three, roughly 30% of the people that are coming into this country without proper documentation with minor children, the DNA testing has shown that roughly 30% of them are not even related. These are human trafficking, and that needs to stop. So we need to vet who is coming into our homes. And for anybody out there who thinks that we should have our borders open, then they better not be locking their doors to their house. They better tear down the fences around their yards. They better not lock up their cars. They should just leave it all wide open, because that's what you're asking for us to do in the country. I am pro immigration. If you come in through the front door and you come in for the right reasons, that is 100% okay with me. Absolutely is okay with me.
Thank you. You're listening to Joe Ray Perkins. Joe Ray Perkins is the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate here in Oregon, and we're doing an equal time interview. We've interviewed and invited all of the candidates for U.S. Senate here in the state of Oregon to KABU. And so far we've heard from Joe Ray Perkins and Ibrahim Tahir of the Green Party. How do you think that we should address the issue of the outbreak of COVID-19 within federal prisons?
If they're sick, you keep them separated. We don't do this for the flu. We've never done this for the influenza. If you're going to be in small quarters, you're likely to get the flu. You're likely to pick up something else. The facts are that 99.97% of the people who get the coronavirus, which is a virus that is also found in the common cold and in seasonal flu, that they recover. So if a person is sick, you don't let them be around other people coughing all over them. So I think that it is just making sure that whether they are incarcerated or whether they're in nursing homes, whether we're in our own homes, we need to use common sense on proper personal hygiene. Wash your hands. If the prisons don't have enough sinks, then or if there's not a way for them to be able to have proper hygiene, then that's a change that needs to be made at that level. I would be curious to see if they have the same numbers tracked for the seasonal flu.
Where do you stand on the issue of the federal death penalty?
Attorney General Barr, who ended the moratorium on the federal death penalty, and that was July of 2019. And those are not anything that is done lightly at any level, whether it is at the federal level or at the state level. Treason is punishable by death, and I support that. That is in our Constitution. It has been in our Constitution since the founding of this country, and I will support that. Treason, there's other federal crimes that they could do, killing law enforcement officer in the act of a crime. That is also in many states. So don't go out there killing people. You're not going to get in trouble.
Again, you are listening to Joe Ray Perkins, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate for the state of Oregon. We're doing an equal time interview here at KBOO Community Radio for all of the U.S. Senate candidates. And Joe Ray, we are almost out of time. Is there anything that we have not covered tonight regarding federal policy and incarceration or the criminal justice system that you would like to say before we close out?
Absolutely, Emma. I have seen and I have heard about people who have been in federal jails, and I'm going to take the Bundys, for example. What we saw happen with Ryan and Ammon Bundy over the last, going back two, three, four years ago was wrong. And that was, again, just a very small drop in the bucket. There definitely needs to be some prison reform. There needs to be ways that people are treated humanely. And, because people are going to do wrong. Not everybody's going to, not everybody can, for whatever reason, cannot keep a life free of crime. So it needs to be looked at. I believe that there is a lot of corruption in the prison system. And I'm very well aware that there is. And there is a level of corruption within law enforcement, where they have the code of honor, where they're going to cover for each other. I have a friend who used to be a state police officer. One of the reasons he's no longer a state police officer is because he got tired of having to be told to rewrite his report so it would match the other reports. He wasn't able to, he was told he could not write the report based on what he saw. And that is corrupt, and that needs to stop. They need to be able to do their jobs in an ethical way. And so when they're being told to be unethical, and that comes from their leadership, that needs to stop. So absolutely, we should not have a revolving door in our prison system. We should have ways that people can be able to get out and get jobs and not have a stigma over their head. My admonishment again to anybody is to choose your life path carefully. You're going to make mistakes. That's okay. We all make mistakes. We're not perfect. Choose life. Choose living your life positive, with a positive outlook. Look for the good in people instead of the bad in people. Start looking at your own self. I've had to have self-reflection multiple times in my life of going, okay, what am I doing wrong? And had to tell myself, start looking more positively. Start thinking more of yourself. Change your self-image and your self-esteem. And it will go so far. And it will actually help to reduce our prison system when people say, yeah, I can go out there. I don't need to play the hand that I was dealt. I can go play a different hand because I don't like this life. And there's too many people out there that have shown that it can be done to say that it cannot. And that's what I encourage people to do. And if they want to know more about me, they can go to my website, perkins4ussenate.vote.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate having you on Prison Pipeline tonight.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Thank you.
OOO Portland. We'll be right back.